Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Steve Bloomfield. Today I'm joined by Matt Wolfe, theatre critic for the International New York Times. We'll be chatting through some of London's top productions this month, including a pint-sized performance of Sweeney Todd, a West End revival of Mary Chase's classic comedy Harvey, and a couple of plays about trying to get on London's property ladder. Yes, there's more than one of them. That's all to come here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Matt Wolfe, welcome to the Arts Review.
A pleasure.
We've got some an interesting mix of,
yes,
of London-based productions here. Should we start with a bit of a classic, with Harvey?
Yes, that's probably the least interesting of the plays we're going to talk about. The interesting thing is that when I was very, very young, I actually saw a major London revival of this with Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, wow.
Who was
really
in the movie. Yeah, he did it on the West End more years ago than you've been on Earth, Steve. And I remember thinking, the play doesn't hold up very well, but that was a while ago. So it's interesting to see if those perceptions hold, and I'm afraid to say they do. The interesting thing is that this play won the Pulitzer Prize, which is America's top dramatic accolade, in 1944, I think it was, and it beat the likes of Tennessee Williams' The Glass Menagerie, one of the great American plays. And that just seems inconceivable now. It's minor key whimsy about a guy called Elwood P. Dowd, who has rather too much of an affection for drink, who as a result conjures up his great buddy, who's a 6'3½ rabbit called Harvey, who's invisible to the rest of the world, but is very visible to him.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, when you put it like that, I can't see what, you know, why anyone wouldn't love it. What do we think of the cast? James Dreyfuss and Maureen Lipman. Does James Dreyfuss, does he live up to the low bar that you had with Jimmy
Stewart?
You know,
the thing about the role is that it needs somebody who projects a kind of blissful innocence, who's kind of a naive in the world, which Jimmy Stewart always kind of had. He had a kind of happy-go-lucky quality, which was perfect for this part, and he was in the movie of the play. James Dreyfuss, fine actor, but he's not really right for the part. And Maureen Lipman playing his older sister, Vita, who ends up incarcerated in the institution that Elwood P. Dowd is intended for, seems more like his mother than his sister. I wouldn't say it's anyone's finest moment.
Why do you think it's been brought back right now?
I think because the Theatre Royal Haymarket has a gap in its schedule until the Elephant Man comes in May. And it's better to have something on the boards than nothing.
And perhaps something as well that, you know, the name has a certain cachet. They've managed to attract a cast that will ensure a certain type of audience member comes to.
Possibly. I mean, the play, I'm told, can land with the right cast. Jim Parsons, the American actor from The Big Bang Theory, did a Broadway revival of it in 2012, I think, which I, alas, didn't see. But the reviews of that were excellent, and everyone said he had that sort of ineffable Stewart-like grace. And that's what this production doesn't have. It's just a bit sort of leaden.
Okay, let's leave that there then. Let's not dwell. It's at the Theatre Royal at Haymarket, indeed, if that floats your boat. Now, this is a little bit smaller, a version of Sweeney Todd, which is rather intimate, really, isn't it?
Yeah. There was a production of Sweeney Todd, which I should go on record saying is one of my all-time favorite Broadway musicals. There was a production of Sweeney Todd, not the original, but a later one on Broadway in 1989, which was very stripped back, and it was known in the biz as Teeny Todd. But that was, you know, kind of relatively conventional. So if that one was Teeny Todd, this one must be Itty Bitty Todd.
Or Teeny Tiny Todd.
Teeny Tiny Weeny Todd. It's in a theater that seats fewer than 70. There's, of course, no orchestra. There's a very good pianist, Benjamin Cox, and then two other instrumentalists who pitch in where necessary. But what's extraordinary about it, and really, really pays enormous dividends, is that a show about sort of baking people into pies set in a pie shop is, in this version of it, set in a pie shop.
Indeed. So it began, they did a version in Tooting first.
They did, which I didn't see, in an actual pie shop, which was selling meat pies by the day, Harrington's Pie Shop in Tooting, and then I guess it closed at whatever time, and the theater people swept in, as theater people are wont to do, and 90 minutes later in came an audience being served theatrical meat pies as opposed to actual meat pies. What the enterprising producer of this has done is take the entire project to Sir Cameron McIntosh, and he, who owns much of Theaterland, gave them this site in Shaftesbury Avenue, and it works wonderfully. I mean, the thing about Sweeney Todd is that it's infinitely elastic. You can do it in the Opera House, as we're about to have, with Emma Thompson and Bryn Terfel in an audience seating, I don't know, 2,300. And then you can do it for about as many people as could fit around this table. And either way it works, because the piece is either surging, soaring, vast and seismic, or scary, intimate, terrifying and personal, depending on how you like it.
And it's interesting that, you know, you think a production like this that's on Shaftesbury Avenue, well, it must be big.
Yeah.
And I quite like the fact that it's in this, you know, a tiny spot in, you know, in one of London's most famous streets.
Absolutely right. Between, it, I should add, two of the theatres owned by Sir Cameron McIntosh. So, you know, there is perhaps some passing trade to be got from it, although with 70 people at performance, not that much passing trade. One thing about it in performance terms that I think really should be emphasised, very often when you see Sweeney Todd, it's got two stonking central roles, Sweeney Todd, and then his accomplice who loves him, although he doesn't much love her, Nellie Lovett. And the attention is always on those two people and the actors playing them. In this production, the two leads are fine, but what's really remarkable are the supporting players who, to a man and woman, are great. And because you're, you know, you can practically breathe on them, and they definitely breathe on you. One of them came right up to me and I thought, this is a bit close for comfort. You can really see how good they are. There's no camouflaging, bad acting, bad singing, and they deliver the goods.
You mentioned that there's going to be another production of Sweeney Todd in London later this year that's a bit more...
In a week.
Oh, well, there we are.
They'll be running concurrently.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be interesting to go to one, then the other.
Well, the interesting thing is the cast of this one, because I don't think this one plays on a Sunday, but I might be wrong. The cast of this one can go see the other one because the other one's doing Sundays. And then the cast of the other one can go see this one on a Monday if they can get in. But I guess if you're Emma Thompson, you can get into anything.
I'm fairly sure. That sounds like actually quite a good feature for a Sunday magazine to get the cast of one to go and see the other.
Yeah, absolutely. I should also add that this teeny itty bitty Todd also has wonderful drinks at the interval themed for the characters from the play. So I will say no more, but they're worth having.
Okay. Is there blood involved in this?
Yeah. Well, red dye number two.
Okay, red dye number two. That's fine. Do you think that when you sort of go to see sort of, you know, the big performance as one of 2,300 people, that it will perhaps look... feel not quite as, obviously not as intimate, but not quite as impressive now?
Well, the thing about the original Sweeney Todd, which is part of my theatrical DNA, which I saw many times in its New York premiere with Angela Lansbury and Len Carew, was that it was in one of Broadway's biggest theaters, and the set for it was apparently a part of a disused iron foundry, and the whole thing had a kind of apocalyptic, big epic feel. It was as if it had been a movie, it would have been Ridley Scott, although Tim Burton weirdly ended up doing the movie. So I think it's a measure of the nature of this piece that it can be done almost any way a director wants to do it. And that's quite unusual. And I think that speaks to something remarkable about the work itself, that you can go big or small and it still resonates.
Okay, Sweeney Todd is on at Shaftesbury Avenue until the 30th of May. But also there's another version, a bigger version, if you so wish, which you can see around the same time. Let's move on to a theme that runs through quite a few performances right now, Matt, yeah. And that's London's property ladder. Now, yeah. As anyone who has lived in London or tried to live in London will know, we're currently experiencing a bit of a housing crisis here.
Yeah.
Bit of a problem trying to find somewhere to live.
Yeah, I gather.
Prices rising all the time.
Yeah.
We're not bitter. We're not bitter at all.
No.
But this is one of the things that, you know, big political issues that come up. Theatre is perfect for grasping onto these and turning around things quite quickly, isn't it?
Yes.
In a way that perhaps film or novels maybe aren't. And we've got two examples now of this.
That's exactly. I mean, it takes films so long to get green lit. Films can go into development hell for decades. Whereas theatre, you're absolutely right, can be fleet of foot, can be very kind of quick to kick into gear. Let's just say, to preface my comments on these two shows, which are very different one from the other, although they have a similar theme, is that I have never been so glad in my life to be a London homeowner. I mean, it's obviously scary times out there. If, for instance, we take Game as an example, this is the Mike Bartlett play at the Almeida Theatre through April 4th. The conceit of this particular project, which reconfigures the Almeida space in Islington, is that the young couple at the centre of the play are so desperate to have a home and at the same time so happy to be given a home that in return for this home that they've been given, they become sort of objects of target practice. So people, members of the public, it could be you, Steve, it could be I, it's a little Sweeney Todd-like in a way. Instead of being baked into pies, they are shot at. In the spirit of fun, it is a game. The title of the play, well, it is ironic, of course, but it isn't meant ironically at the beginning. So they are shot at by what seem to be tranquilizer darts, and then they're shot at and they fall down and then they stand up again. But the play covers quite a bit of time, although it's only 55 minutes in performance. And over time, the couple want to have a child. They do have a child. The kid is, you know, six, seven, whatever he is by the end. And he becomes part of the target practice as well, by which point the game seems less fun, if you get my drift. And the show has a lot to say about voyeurism, about what happens when, you know, people become objects of sport and what we mean by sport. And, you know, the fact that we can look at all sorts of horrific things, which you and I know full well, on the internet, should we choose to. So where does the capacity for kind of bearing witness to cruelty begin and end? And all of this is because this young couple want a place to live.
And this is, as you say, it covers many more issues other than just, you know, the fact that it's difficult to find somewhere to live. But that's its sort of starting point.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think what the play is really about is the seduction into cruelty, that we begin thinking, oh, that would be kind of fun. And also, I'm getting paid and these people, the whole thing is they're not going to be killed. You know, you fire at them. If you fire accurately, the young man or the young woman falls to the ground. Oh, look, then they have a kid. Well, he'll really love it because kids love games. Oh, look, he falls to the ground. But then you think, he's a kid. Mm. And so the whole thing becomes pretty creepy and you leave it feeling really disgusted, which I think is the point. I don't say that as a criticism. Mm. I think you're meant to leave it feeling kind of sick at yourself and sick at society.
Okay. Let's talk about Radiant Vermin on at the Soho Theatre, yeah, which is dealing with the same issue in a very different way.
Well, that it is. I really love Radiant Vermin. I think it's sort of unexpectedly, it's really lovely to go to things where you don't really expect much of anything, good or bad, and you're just pleasantly thrilled, which is what I was with this last Sunday afternoon. It's also about a young couple who want a place to live. They're living on a very, very dreary estate with drug addicts and God knows what is their next door neighbors. And all of a sudden, one day they're visited by the local fairy godmother who's called Miss D, and she announces that they've been given a dream home. And it's free. And they say, well, there has to be a catch. And she says, no, here are the keys, but you have to take it now or you're forever going to rue the day. So they say yes. They go to their dream home. Of course, the catch is that the dream home isn't really ready. So they have to wire it. They have to plumb it, all of that. The dream home also happens to be near a rather large and seemingly ever increasing encampment of the homeless. And because the homeless also want a home, they gravitate towards this dream home that this young couple are living in. And I really shouldn't say too much more because you really don't want to know what happens here, except that the homeless get folded into the dream home in a very interesting and rather sinister way. But what's interesting about Radiant Vermin is that the tone of the whole thing is cheeky, larky, playful. There's a lot of talking to the audience. A lot of it is actually, although it isn't called game, it's presented like a game. So it's really fun and funny. And yet the more you think about it, you think, ooh, gosh, I'm not sure. Whereas game is like, you know, being put in a vice for 55 minutes. So they achieve the same result, but in very different ways.
There's also, I believe, at the Hampstead now, Deposit as well, which is also sort of about trying to buy a home as well. There's a real theme of this at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, it's interesting. It sort of makes you...
Three's a trend, definitely.
It's definitely a trend. I wonder whether these three playwrights were ever in a flat share together. That's what I want to know. And they were like, one day, guys, you know what? The problems we're having finding our next digs are going to make it on stage, and it's all happened in the same month.
There we are. Okay, so that was Game at the Almeida. Radiant Vermin is at Soho and Deposit is at Hampstead. If you have a house and are quite happy to go and see other people struggling. There we are. I think that's it.
If you're willing to leave your house and go to the theatre.
Well, indeed.
Maybe not.
Who knows?
Who knows who will take it over?
Indeed. Matt Wolfe, as ever.
Thank
you very much indeed. That was the Monocle Arts Review with me, Steve Bloomfield. Join us again tomorrow for this week's literary highlights. But the time being, thanks for listening.